live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about zinc for old people and why it's important. It'll let them live a lot longer and be a lot healthier. And helping heal the brain. One single chemical that is found in medical, the cannabinoids of marijuana helps with Alzheimer's. Now, that does not mean smoking marijuana, and I'll get to that. I'll explain the difference between medical uses that have been shown to help with brain cancer and seizures and multiple sclerosis and Alzheimer's. That's an oil. That's an extract. That's a standard product. But it's not the smoking. And there are problems with the smoking that people have not recognized. So, yes, it's healing, it's powerful, but in the right way. And I'll give that insight today. And a lot of stuff on health and nutrition, always from quality peer-reviewed journals, to show you that what we in the alternative community present actually supports the best of independent science. Also today, we're going to continue with the Conversations with Remarkable Minds. We're going to talk with James O'Day. He is the former president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and he is going to talk about becoming a conscious activist by infusing our activism with spiritual values to confront the challenges ahead. You won't want to miss that. Also today, I'll play you a clip that I watched last night of Dr. Suzanne Humphreys in Sweden, in Stockholm, making a presentation to a group of physicians, orthomolecular physicians, on vitamin C. Many of you in the audience know the power of vitamin C. Thousands of you have had your lives improved or actually saved based upon very high levels doses of vitamin C. I can't tell you how often I sat with people at the Tri-State Healing Center for 7 years, seven nights a week, as they were getting infused with vitamin C and having wonderful discussions. Many of those people, if you're around today, you'll be happy to know that there's a lot more we now know. Now, why this particular clip is important, I'll play other parts of it later on. It's a two-hour lecture. I'll play maybe 10 minutes today. It's because there's brand new research out showing how much vitamin C should we ideally have if we were using an animal model, meaning animals that produce vitamin C, how much do they produce per kilogram? 2.2 pounds of body weight. Far more than what we're consuming as children or adults. So we need a lot more vitamin C than what we've been using. Now, some of you in this listening right now around the world, I'm sure that you have been on a farm, lived on a farm. What is the one animal on a farm that almost never gets sick? It is the healthiest of all animals. The goat. Do you realize that a goat consumes upwards of 100,000 milligrams of vitamin C? It produces it. Why? And it's one of the things that keeps it at the top of the barnyard health, vitamin C. So you're going to hear Dr. Suzanne Humphreys. Also today, short commentaries on the Gates Foundation and sponsoring Seeds Agenda in Africa. Well, many of us feel it's another form of colonialism. And Lauren McCauley will talk about that. They just met yesterday. They're meeting today in England to see how they can divvy up Africa, control the seeds, make sure that no African uses anything but their patented, profitable seeds. Also today, continuing with our series on America, the fascist state, private police, mercenaries for the American police state, John Whitehead. Yearning for the past. Is human society regressing? Professor John Causey, Global Research. How privatization degrades our daily lives. We haven't been paying attention when the government has been outsourcing all these different things to private groups. How much profit do they make? Would you believe that over what a citizen would make if they were hired by the government, as a government employee to do a job, that a private industry takes on that, they can make from 1,000 to 100,000% profit? I'll give you examples. Also today from Professor Robert Reich, why college is not and shouldn't have been for everyone. And if time permits, from our environmental segment, to solve California's water crisis, we must change the nation's food system. By the way, how much of our food do you think is grown in California? Just guess. One state. It's amazing. Recently, when I was going to do a PBS special, I flew over the San Joaquin Valley. It's a desert. Let me see if we get this right. We produce the most amount of food in the world in one place that's a desert, that's in a drought, that's run out of water, that only has 1 year left, and nothing is being done about it. Oh, don't flush your toilet if you're urinating. Don't wash your car so often. You think that's going to work? I don't think so. Why aren't we willing to face the reality? We shouldn't be living and growing things in deserts. So we have that. Plus a short little commentary from Steve Brown on the National Local Board, where he talks about the New York Times. And good for him for standing up and writing what is an intelligent, short, incisive piece about the corporate Democratic community's favorite publication, the New York Times, whitewashing Saudi Arabia's barbaric criminal justice system. As you see, we have a lot to cover. And of course, we always like to begin with health and nutrition because that impacts everyone listening. And one of the things we have found out is zinc, small little mineral, plays a very important role in our health. This is from Oregon State University. And they're saying that if you're deficient in it, which most Americans are, then you're going to have a negative immune system reaction. And if you're older, that's going to hurt you because that's going to stimulate inflammation. One of the things that happens with virtually all chronic diseases, we're talking about cardiovascular diseases, pulmonary diseases, your lungs, cancers, no matter where they are on the body, diabetes, virtually all of your itises, ileitis, Crohn's disease, colitis, spastic colon, the ulcers in the stomach, the arthritic joints, brain inflammation, all of those have inflammation as a primary causative factor. Now, it is a reaction to what you've drank or breathed or consumed. Zinc is important. Quote, when you take away zinc, the cells that control inflammation appear to activate and respond differently. This causes the cells to promote more inflammation. End quote. That was from Dr. Emily Ho, professor and director of the center at Oregon State University. So, what is the takeaway message? The message is that 12% of the entire American population are deficient in zinc. That's an awful lot of people. Zinc is an essential micronutrient. It's required for growth, for development, for neurological function, and for immunity to keep you healthy. So take 15 to 20 milligrams a day of zinc. Also, from the University of Western Australia, vitamin D is vital for gene expression in developing brains. Quote, vitamin D deficiency in mothers leading up to and during pregnancy has fundamental consequences for their offspring's developing brain. So, what should we do? If you are pregnant, make sure that you're getting your recommended daily allowance of vitamin D plus. Why do I say plus? Because new research came out last week that showed that virtually all the calculations about how much vitamin D we need are wrong. They're wrong by about 300%. So instead of 2,000, it should be more likely 6,000 units of vitamin D a day. So get your vitamin D. And these are people that just didn't even have that amount because it's going to impact the brain. Also, if you want to stop osteoporosis, which so many people in America have, according to Taiwanese scientists, they found after they checked 17,000 people, 70% of them had low bone density. That meant that they were going to have weak bones. Now, in America, how many times have you heard, oh, someone fell and broke their hip? No. The hip spontaneously breaks and they fall because of it. We have brittle bones, mainly because we've been eating dairy products, which are not good for our bones. They're bad for our bones. And not taking vegetable sources of calcium and magnesium, which are better. And what else do you need more than any other nutrient? You need vitamin D3. And that's what this study found, that when you have low levels of vitamin D3 in your blood, you're more susceptible to osteoporosis, brittle bones. But also you want magnesium and calcium, phosphorus and boron, isoflavon, vitamin K2, and vitamin D3 and phosphorus. That's what you need. Now, where do you get that? You can get it from phytonutrients, kale, seaweed, collard greens, Swiss chard, spinach. Those are the sources we should be getting it. Sesame seeds. A lot of people have trouble sleeping. And if you live in New York City, it's because of the noise. I use earplugs when I travel on a plane. You should use them, but also to keep out outside noise. Here's what works best. This is based on a new study where they looked at everything that could allow you to have a better night's sleep. And what did they find? They found melatonin. Mela, M-E-L-A, tonin, T-O-N-I-N. It is the nutrient that is secreted from your pineal gland. That's a tiny little grape seed size gland in the middle of your brain. And that allows you to sleep even in noisy conditions. This is according to Science Magazine. So, I would suggest starting with 1 milligram and see how you do for a week. If it doesn't work, go to 2 milligrams. You could go up to 3 or 4 milligrams safely, and that can make a difference. Now, another thing that vitamin D does, now we've seen it helps with osteoporosis, it helps with better sleep, but how about for the millions of Americans who are depressed? According to a new article in Psychiatry Research, they have found an association between depression in young women and low levels of vitamin D. That's D3. Also in vitamin C. So, if you want to have a greater capacity for emotional balance without depression, get your vitamin D3. And also the pear. Now, we know pear's got great fiber. The Comus pear is my favorite pear because it's juicy and get it cold and it's just delicious. And if you juice it, it's just spectacular. And you put a little mint in it. So if you've ever... And Comus is not available year-round. But when you do get it, if you you peel off the skin, you cube it, make sure it's been refrigerated, you throw it in a blender, and then you put some sprigs of mint in and some water, mineral water. It's spectacular. Best thing to quench your thirst. But now we found out it does something else that we didn't know about. This is brand new science from the University of Massachusetts. And it says the following, quote, scientists led by Dr. Sarkar, University of Massachusetts, analyzed the pulp and skin of two varieties of pear, including the most common in America, the Bartlett pear, and the other one is the Star Crimson, and they found probiotic. Who knew that the pear could help balance gut microbiota? And especially when it came to type 2 diabetes and hypertension. They investigated whether whole pear juice, fermented, could have probiotic beneficial effects in inhibiting the growth of Helicobacter, what we call H. pylori. And that promotes stomach ulcers and cancer. And they found that it did. But it had also tremendous benefit for the management of type 2 diabetes and hypertension. So let's just summarize what we're getting when we have the phenolic and antioxidant contents of a pear. By the way, there are 3,000 varieties of pears. We found that it can inhibit H. pylori with 48 to 72 hours. So what would I do? I would take the Bartlett pear, juice it, and then juice some cabbage juice and put those two together with vitamin C. That would be the best thing I could suggest for stomach ulcers, stomach cancer, and that, because the best thing I ever recommend for people who have stomach problems is cabbage juice. Sauerkraut juice would be behind it. So you could do those too. So you're getting probiotics. That's terrific for it. But it also can help with blood pressure and diabetes. So all those are good. And finally, there's a lot to be said about the benefits of essential oils, because according to some interesting studies in natural health, we are now suffering from antibiotic resistance. We know that. We overuse antibiotics. We use them for a lot of conditions that they're not even indicated. So the overuse of antibiotics in animal foods, you have it in dairy, you have it in meat, then it ends up in your body. And then when you do have a case where you need an antibiotic, it may not work. And the costs of antibiotic resistance are very high. We know of antibiotic-resistant bacteria caused over 2 million illnesses last year in the United States, 23,000 deaths. So when you have that many that are known to have died, known to have infected, you got to multiply that by 10. So we probably had over 200,000 people who in the hospital, no one realized that they had also antibiotic resistance. So here's where intelligent alternatives to antibiotics come out. The essential oils. There was a Italian study discovered that a mixture of thyme and clove essential oils was equally as effective at treating bacterial vaginosis as traditional antibiotics. Another study just a year and a half ago clearly demonstrated staph wounds healing more quickly with tea tree oil vapor than regular antibiotics. Another study published in Tropical Journal of Pharmaceutical Research showed lemongrass oil in a hand gel got rid of MRSA. And MRSA is one of the most deadly bacteria in the world. It kills thousands and thousands of people. So just think. You have MRSA, M-R-S-A, and it kills people. And here is a simple lemongrass oil that kills it with no harmful effects. Of course, we always have known about wild oregano oil. That's terrific. And peppermint oil and cinnamon oil. So we should have all these in our home. You never know when you're going to need them. So the essential oils, there are books on it, there are articles on it. And I've published a big article on the healing power of essential oils on our website today. So that's the latest in health and healing. And by the way, I'm sorry, but we're all filled up again. We've had over 7 million downloads, and the Facebook page is growing daily. And just 200,000 visits in the last week alone. So I want to thank all the people for using the articles, the documentaries, the calls to action to help on different causes around the world. And keep in mind, no matter where you live, we look at the whole world every 24 hours. We look at the issues that are not being addressed, and we try to address them in a way that can empower people. For example, there's big riots in Spain today and yesterday. It wasn't even covered in the American media because there are austerity programs. We covered it. We covered the truth about the U.S. coup behind the problems in the Ukraine and what's happening with the Ukrainian people disgusted with their currently corrupt government. We also show you the truth at the International Monetary Fund in Europe and the European Central Bank in the European Union wants to make sure that Greece keeps giving back money to the investment banks and the hedge funds and other people, the bonds keepers, but not to the average Greek person. So when you hear about $6 billion, $20 billion, $200 billion, none of that money goes to the Greek people. It doesn't go for buying food or shelter or education or cleaning up their streets. None of that. It goes to the money people. We share that with you. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. And when we come back, we're going to go right into a lecture by Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, medical doctor, who is going to quote a man that I once communicated with when I started doing some work on vitamin C, and he had done the most work of anyone that I could find in America on vitamin C at the highest doses. No doctor I knew was willing to use more than 1,000 milligrams vitamin C. This guy was using 50,000 units, 50,000 milligrams, with spectacular results. Very orthodox doctor, Dr. Frederick Klenner. You'll hear his name come up here in his research. It was Linus Pauling who looked at his work. But then we took it from 50 to 200,000 milligrams. And that's where we were able to reverse AIDS-related illnesses, advanced cancers. Our medical team was just shocked that we work with thousands of people. It's a matter of record. And yet no one picked up on it. No one wanted to go there. So we're going to see what she has to say about vitamin C. It'll be very enlightening. You won't want to miss this. And from there, we're going to go to our guest. Stay with us. Suzanne Humphreys in Stockholm, Sweden, lecturing before the Orthomolecular Medical Society.
There is a lot of mythology in the conventional medical realm that that trickles down and moves into society. And this mythology is mythology that I used to believe, and that is that vitamin C is, you know, it's necessary to prevent scurvy, but it doesn't really necessary to be given in any higher doses than we get in our food necessarily today. Well, I found this not to be true, not only for my patients and for myself, but the medical literature and some alternative literature really supports that these myths are actually not true. One of the myths that you'll hear often from conventional doctors is that doses over 1,000 milligrams are dangerous and wasteful and just gives you expensive urine. We hear that the body becomes saturated if you take 150 milligrams, so no use taking any more. We hear that kidney stones can be a big problem and we have to be on the alert not to develop kidney stones. We hear that there is no science behind high ascorbate use, despite the fact that Nobel Prize-winning scientists have shown that there is science and there's ongoing science for the use. We hear often that natural whole vitamin C is always the best thing to be used. Now, food is always the best thing to be used first, but when you're really very sick, you will not get enough vitamin C from your food. Okay, I'm here seeing nods, so... And the other thing is that we can get diarrhea from high doses of ascorbate, and we hear that this is dangerous and we can kill little babies and cause bowel necrosis. None of this is true. None of this has ever been proven clinically or scientifically. We also hear that you can get enough from food when you are very ill, and that also is not true. So animals use four sequential liver enzymes to convert glucose, it's very simple actually, into another chemical, which has this fancy name right there, and it is called 2-keto-L-gulonolactone. You don't need to know that. But But then that shape shifts automatically into L-ascorbic acid. And this is the magic chemical that has so many functions in our body that enhance our health and can be very life-saving in certain situations and can be consumed very rapidly during illness. This enzyme right here, number four, is missing from human beings and some other animals, some bats, some guinea pigs, and some primates. The gene that codes for it is present in humans, but it just doesn't work. We don't know why. So human beings and these other animals are dependent upon the food source in order to have this life-saving nutrient. So let's take a look now at animals that make their own vitamin C. If we look at a cow will make 18 milligrams per kilogram per day, and they will take in a total of around 12,000 milligrams, plus all that they're getting around here as well, okay? So he's making 12,000, or she, and also eating the grass and the greens, which have more vitamin C. Then we can look at cats. They make their own 20 to 40 milligrams per kilogram per day for a total of around 180 milligrams per day intake. Production. Now, mind you, the recommended dietary allowance for me is half of that, about, okay? All right, so now let's look at animals that are dependent upon the environment for vitamin C because they cannot manufacture their own. If we look at a wild gorilla, we'll eat approximately 30 milligrams per kilogram per day for around 4,500 milligrams. If we look at the guinea pig, the classic animal that does not make vitamin C, which I believe is why this makes actually a good lab animal to do research looking for illnesses in humans, is because they also don't make their own vitamin C. And they'll take about 30 milligrams per day, and again, about 33 milligrams per kilogram per day. So it's my belief that this is actually a good place to start in estimating what our baseline requirements are, even as human beings, 30 milligrams per kilogram per day, approximately. Now, this is me on a farm in New Zealand with two goats, the baby and the mother, and I found out interesting information about goats, and that is that when goats are healthy, they make 185 milligrams per kilogram per day. And when they are stressed, they can make up to 1,400 milligrams per kilogram per day for a total of around 100,000 milligrams, okay? And one day the veterinarian came out to the farm to deal with some problems with the other animals, and he volunteered to us that goats hardly ever get sick. And when they do get sick, it's usually something so bad that it kills them. So that is, I think, very interesting anecdotal information. Now, I make none of my own vitamin C, and I am told that I only need 75 milligrams per day, and that's about 1.2 milligram per kilogram per day. So as you can see, there's something very wrong with the estimation that we as human beings need, even when we compare ourselves to animals who make their own and animals who are dependent. Is a gross underestimation of our actual need. Well, there were problems with how these estimates for human beings were made, and I don't really have time to get into that, but briefly, it was done just on a few healthy men and women, very small group, and they looked at the wrong kind of cells in order to make this estimation of what we need. So the science behind this estimate is flawed. And some scientists came along later and said, no, 200 milligrams per day. And the authorities rejected that, even 200. So they still say 75 to 90, for 90 for man, 75 for woman. And if I'm a smoker, they say, add 35 milligrams. Well, I'll tell you that one cigarette uses 25 milligrams of vitamin C. So you can see if I'm smoking 10 cigarettes per day, I'm already tapping into my reserves of vitamin C. Okay, so I just want to emphasize that simply preventing scurvy is not the same as promoting optimal health. These levels here that they're telling us is for preventing scurvy, and they're still rather inaccurate because if one is to develop, say, influenza or whooping cough, those reserves can be depleted very rapidly. Okay, so I looked around to see if anybody studied the levels in the blood of vitamin C in people and what it is. And I found this study from Canada, and they looked at people who were coming in and out of hospital to have their blood drawn. So they might be a little bit sick because they're probably, you know, getting blood tests. But this was what they found, is that 84% they said was normal. This 23% they said subnormal, and only 11.4% they called deficient. Now, what they call normal, I don't call normal, because they're calling less than greater than 28.4 normal. I believe that 100 to 125 is probably closer to normal, and I'll show you why in a minute. So I think more than this is actually walking around with low levels. But let's look at the difference now in patients who are in hospital and ill. What we find is that there's much more of them that are subnormal, 60% subnormal, 19% are called deficient, which is very, very low level here, 11.4 micromole per liter, and only 21% considered normal by their very low standards. And if we look at this graph at the bottom, what it shows that the hospitalized patients are the black bars, and the outpatients are the clear bars. And you can see, expect some overlap. But what I want to point out is that both of these groups had some people that were up around 100 or 125. And this, in addition to other literature that I have read and the dynamics of vitamin C in the body, is what leads me to say, I believe this is a better range for us to live in. 100, 125, even 150 is easily possible with repeated, either high diet with this nutrient, or with repeated doses of various forms. So this study concluded and said that nearly 1 in 5 had plasma vitamin C concentration consistent with scurvy. And even more disturbing to me was that 24% of these people, when they went into hospital, were taking vitamins, and doctors discontinued most of it when they were admitted to hospital. So I wonder to myself now if conventional doctors even knew about this, if they would do anything about it, because we still are living with this myth that we don't need to look at vitamin C levels in sick people and we don't need to supplement, although that is changing. But there was a doctor, even back as far as 1950s, who had a rather interesting comment to make about his colleagues. This is Dr. Frederick Klenner, who was one of the pioneers of using high doses of ascorbate, and he cured many of the most atrocious diseases in the 1950s, including polio, and this black widow spider bite, which he gives a detailed case history. And in this case history, he says that there are some physicians who would stand by and watch the patient die rather than use this vitamin C, because they're still thinking that it exists only as a vitamin. And it is much more than a vitamin, and I'll tell you more about that in a moment. So there's another interesting study here, because it basically just works with food, with some kiwi fruits. And this is a study from New Zealand, and they got some adult males around 30 years old, healthy, and they wanted to see what the vitamin C levels in the muscle were. So they volunteered for these horrible muscle biopsies, but we got some interesting information. They started by just measuring their levels, their blood levels, and they found that they're pretty much on the low end of normal. 30 to 40 was their range when they started. Then they said, just consume a diet low in vitamin C and stop supplements. And look, it dropped down within 5 weeks, dropped down almost to levels of scurvy. And then they said to half of them, you take one half of a kiwi fruit per day, and the other half, eat 2 kiwi fruits per day, and then we'll see what happens to your levels. And interestingly is that they were able to rise these levels fairly high just with 2 kiwi fruits per day, up to 70. And even the half kiwi fruit had a pretty good effect in the muscle, okay? Now, mind you, different parts of our bodies need different amounts of vitamin C. The adrenal gland and the eye need very high amounts, for instance. Muscle, somewhere in between. So this is just an interesting study that shows you that if we did eat a minimum of 5 fruits and vegetables per day that has vitamin C in it, that most of us could have pretty good levels, assuming they're not sprayed with pesticides and they're fairly fresh and we're not smoking and being exposed to dangerous chemicals. So you can divide the need for vitamin C into 2 categories. And it can be the everyday needs, like detoxifying chemicals like car fumes, like preventing damage from environmental sprays, or from any poison, because vitamin C acts as an electron donor. And what those electrons does is fixes the damage that's done by these oxidative stress. And I'll give you more detail about that in a moment. So that's why vitamin C is called antioxidant.
Now, we'll continue with her comments tomorrow. And I'll add in that what she's going to share is very important, but there's a new model that I believe will take it even to a much greater level, and I'll share that with you about how do you know how much you need. And I'll explain it's based upon your stress, the toxic reactions to your environment, how much you have already done to repair the damage, or maybe you haven't done anything, in which case, how much vitamin C do you need? And because we've seen the clinical evidence, as well as laboratory studies, we'll give you a much better, more accurate amount of vitamin C per day. But it's in the thousands of milligrams, not 70 milligrams. And it's closer to what a gorilla would get. But remember, a gorilla is not living the same life exposed to the same chemicals and stressors that we are. Therefore, that stress really increases the amount of vitamin C that our human being needs. More from Dr. Suzanne Humphreys on tomorrow's program. In a few minutes, we're going to go to our guest, who is standing by in Crestone, Colorado, to talk about becoming a conscious activist by infusing our activism with spiritual values to confront the challenges ahead. That's James O'Day, former president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. And he was director of Amnesty International's Washington office, and he's been in a lot of conflict zones around the world. So we'll go to him as soon as we get him up. I want to read this, because when I read the New York Times, some things are fine and objective. Others are clearly not, where there's been either self-censorship or there has been a decision to support one position, like they support pro-vaccination, and they won't even give a forum, a legitimate form, to someone who may have all the credentials and background and truth who objects to vaccination, as just one example. This is where they came down on the side of Saudi Arabia. And have you noticed how many people in the media have sided with Saudi Arabia because they are one of our important allies? Well, here's what Steve Brown had to write. Quote, "The bizarre and embarrassing article in the New York Times is a surprise for its attempt to whitewash Saudi Arabia's barbaric criminal justice system and widespread violations of human rights. I wonder what backroom arm-twisting by the State Department or Big Oil at the corporate level got this article published. I suppose we should be reassured because, as the article informs us, the Saudis have only beheaded 88 prisoners last year, mostly for such crimes as adultery, sorcery, and drug receiving. I suppose, too, that our media will continue to manifest horrified outrage at the beheadings of ISIS while remaining silent on those of our long-term and vigorously supported Saudi allies. Certainly, John Kerry never brings up human rights violations on his state visits to that country, although he frequently fulminates against alleged violations of, say, Iran, whose criminal justice system is far more equitable than that of Saudi Arabia. It's not that our media and government officials are hypocrites. They always have been. It's that they are now so excruciatingly blatant about it." Good for you, Steve Brown. Anyone else doing little commentaries or op-eds? Let me have them. We'll share them with people. Okay, now let's go over to Crestone and say hello to James. Hi, James.
Hi, Gary.
Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you.
Many of our listeners are actively engaged in improving our world, whether at a small local level or larger national and global levels. And for those of us who encounter and read daily the disturbing news, it seems to only increase, and realize that the amount of pain human beings across the planet are suffering from does not seem to be abating, but rather growing. There can be a tendency to fall into what some call passive denial. In other words, we realize the scope of the problems, but it becomes so overwhelming, almost taking on a quality unto itself, that we feel helpless to try to deal with it. Or alternatively, we experience burnout from reflecting upon the magnitude of the problems and tasks at hand. Almost in every sphere of human life, food scarcity, essential resources such as water, climate change, corrupt governments, financial systems collapsing, social unrest, wars, growing economic inequality, and so on, our lives are being challenged and our futures for ourselves and our loved ones and children are directly threatened. So I want you to address the magnitude of the challenges and problems humanity faces, as well as the other species being we live on this planet with them, and then look at the positive and constructive work with confronting despair and burnout in a different way. What are the moral principles and values we should embrace to find the strength to proceed and move forward? The forum is yours.
Wow, big question. What we have to do, as you say, in this epic moment of humanity's evolution is get the optic right. Get so adjust our lenses this morning, folks, and see that there are two things happening. And one is that the systems are crashing. The right-wing fundamentalist tendencies are arising. Violence is increasing in various parts of the world. But there is another optic. There is another vision. And that is that people are integrating spirituality as never before. They're integrating their morality about what needs to be done. They're living new lives. They're transforming the way they teach at schools and parent in the homes. It goes right very, very deep into the heart of a spiritual revolution on planet Earth. And so the name of the game is this, that evolution is driving us forward. That's why all of this is happening. But what we carry forward are the unlearned parts. So we integrate, we fix, we create new forms, new systems, new democracies, new spiritual integration. But what we haven't learned, we carry forward to the next generation and we give it to them and we say, we got this far, now you guys have to take it to the next level. That's why it's such an epic moment. That's why I wrote that book, The Conscious Activist, where activism meets mysticism, because it's a time when only integration will carry us through, when our work is that if we take it as deep as we can and learn how to unravel the ego and the mess of the intergenerational transmission of wounds, if we can do that inner work, go as deep as we can, and then we go as far out as we can into the social order, creating new forms of enlightenment, of new forms of parenting, holistic education, healing methodologies, which you know and you talk about so much on this program. When we integrate those two things, the mystic, you see, wants to taste God, wants to be with the divine, wants to know it, has to move away from the linearity of the world. And the activist says, well, wait a minute, we've got to go right into the heart of the problem and solve it. We take those two energies and we've got something really important happening. So people say to me often, how have you guided your life through so many places of torture and wounding and suffering that you've lived through and worked in? And I say, it's the beauty, my friends. Keep your eyes focused on the beauty. There is beauty everywhere, even in the harshest, most ugly conditions. there is beauty. Be guided by that beauty. And that's a moral beauty as well. Not just what we're talking about here is the spiritual beauty, a very profound level of beauty. And that beauty will carry us forward through this epic challenging that we're facing.
I appreciate those insights. Thank you. Since our future is full of uncertainties and an activist in some ways is stepping into the unknown with unknown consequences, it is somewhat analogous to the person who becomes a spiritual seeker and likewise enters unknown territory of a psycho-spiritual nature. We often hear criticisms of the religious and spiritual groups being that they don't walk their talk. When I was down at Zuccotti Square during Occupy Wall Street, where were the spiritual and religious organizations? Where was their presence made? I did observe individuals that I would say were spiritually focused, but no collective representation from the churches, synagogues, mosques, temples, and other organizations. And therefore, young people have a sound reason to criticize modern religious institutions today. Certainly, in a more private and less public way, many religious groups do excellent philanthropic work, both here and abroad. Yet when there is civil activism against the powerful forces of oppression, either government or private, such as Wall Street or Monsanto, where are the religious and spiritual groups then? I would like to hear your thoughts on this and how higher principles might be turned into constructive activism against more powerful forces of domination and oppression and destruction.
Well, you're putting your finger right on it. This is exactly the question of our time. What I refer to is that integration that is needed. We do need, you know, to meditate. We do need to go inward, and we need to go outward as well. And it's matching those two things that is essential. So when we say to the activist, you know, what your work is now is to continue to hold up an analysis of the problem, but also to be the solution. Don't get fixated inside the problem. So the problem, the entropy, what I call the snake eyes entropy of the problem, drags you into discussing and acting in its terms. But be inside this. Put your analysis into the problem and your energy into the solution. That's a code for you to think about as an activist. That means you've got to do less finger-pointing, more enactment of the solution. And on the spiritual side, as deep and as hard as your work is to take you to the transcendent levels, where ego doesn't exist, where it's non-dual, where you're really in a state of love and unconditional love and forgiveness and reconciliation, enact those energies, bring them into the world. And when we match those two things together, I think we have the solution for our time. So I really appreciate your pointing in this direction, Gary, because as the Dalai Lama himself says, it's really not enough to be compassionate. Wow, the Dalai Lama said that? Why did he say it's not enough to be compassionate? Because he says, it's not enough to be compassionate. One must act. And it's that bringing together of the inner compassion, which is not easy to attain. You need deep spiritual work. You need all of that mystical training to get there so that you feel that you can denounce torture and all those immoral practices, and yet have compassion for the torturer, have compassion for those who are in their ignorance are slaughtering people. That's deep, deep work to get to that state where you're not dividing the world, you're bringing it together. There are so many examples in the work I've seen of people coming together after deep, deep suffering to reconcile with each other, to forgive. The power of those inner worlds is the greatest power on earth. Forgiveness, love, reconciliation. I often say, a story is just a nightmare if it doesn't lead to reconciliation and resolution. So it is mighty work for us at this time, but we're up to it. Evolution has prepared us, has given us the capacities to say, you can go in both directions. You don't have to sit on the pillow all day and become an expert meditator. And you don't have to burn your life out with moral outrage. You can put the two together and be an embodiment of moral beauty in a confused world. And I say to you, Gary, and I say to our listeners, it's happening. It's happening everywhere. It's happening in your work, in your retreats, and in so many like-minded situations where people are really saying, we can be the solution. We can be love on earth, even when the crisis reaches this extraordinary level of confusion and chaos.
My last question concerns a natural tendency and a trap people fall into when they enter activist causes, and that tendency is to divide the problem between us and them, good and bad, black and white, polar opposites, without any gradation between them. Why is this a danger both for constructive activism and for our personal spiritual growth? And what hints can you offer to avoid falling into this mental trap?
Great question again. And I would say there's a kind of moral ambiguity or moral confusion that's circulating in certain places that says, you know, it's us versus them on the one side, or everything was perfect and it'll all work out on the other side. And what we need is that sense of moral clarity that says, fierce moral clarity that says, torture, no. Execution, killing other people, no. Burning up our resources on the planet, no. You know, outrageously vulgar pursuit of wealth and extreme poverty, no, that's morally inappropriate. That sounds like it's going down that road of division. But where the conscious activist comes in is to say, no, but look at with compassion and love at the ignorance that's created that. If we move to the level of consciousness and say, let's transform the consciousness that creates, that thinks that it's a patriotic thing to torture people. Then we get into the heart of working on the solution. Because it's only that sense of profound understanding that human beings, good, good human beings, get led into doing terrible things and into selfish ways and so forth, that we can really address the problem of our time. And that's why I think it's such an exciting time to live, and why I wrote the book, The Conscious Activist, because we're on the edge of whole systems transformation, whole systems education, whole systems healing, the kind of work that you, Gary, are so deeply involved in. And I truly believe that we can address with that fierce moral clarity the problems of the world. I really truly believe that those political leaders who are willfully denying climate change will be looked at in the future as we look at people who are responsible for crimes against humanity, because the climate change will probably result in more death and destruction than any genocide we have ever seen. And yet, even there, when we go to that level of clarity, we say, how did it happen? How did it happen that you got to be this way? You know, how did you get so wounded that you would hurt another people? How did you get so wounded that you would deny the evidence of 99% of science on climate change? And it's with love and compassion and bringing it together that we can do it. So that's where I think the difference is from the past. When I was growing up as an activist, it was, you know, us versus them, right versus wrong, No sense other than
James, unfortunately, we're out of time.
People who are wrong.
James, unfortunately, we're out of time. I've got to say thank you very much. I look forward to another conversation. James O'Day, O-D-E-A, and he is the author of The Conscious Activist. His website is jamesoday.com. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.